You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Now, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Interstate Battery retail stores all over the United States. So whether you need a new truck battery, which, by the way, I've heard that they are some of the best in the automotive industry, right? A truck battery, a car battery. If you need batteries for something as simple as a remote control or a unique battery for a range finder or one of your children's toys, Interstate Batteries not only has those batteries available, if they don't have them, they can order them for you. Or if you need to find out more about a specific battery or the specs of a specific battery, stop into their retail store and talk with a battery specialist. These guys are very knowledgeable about what products they offer and what it is that you need for whatever battery you're looking for. So stop in to a local retail store or visit interstatebatteries.com to learn more about their company, the batteries that they offer, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So check out interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ohio Huntsman Podcast. And this week, as we're getting ready for deer season to open, we thought it would be good to talk about early season success, ways to be successful in the deer woods in the early season. Because, you know, as we all know, season changes as it, you know, tactics change as season progresses, and early season can be kind of tricky. So we kind of talk about some of those tactics that we use, what our plans are for early season. So before we get into that, as always, I need to do our sponsor read. So sponsor for this episode is Monster Whitetail Grub. So Monster Whitetail Grub is a Ohio deer feed company. They, like I said, they're an Ohio deer feed company because they try to source everything locally from Ohio, even down to their packaging and things. So their ingredients, their packaging, their slogan is Deer Feed the Ohio Way. So it's a good company and you get to support the Ohio economy. So we've had good success with it, and if that's something that you're interested in using this fall as a way to either get pictures of deer or get deer in front of your stand, I encourage you to check them out. Go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors, and that's where all of our sponsor information is. You can get in touch with them and order some of their stuff, or I've been seeing on their Facebook page that there's a handful of retailers throughout the state that are starting to carry their product. So check them out, Monster Whitetail Grub. And now, updates for this week, guys. What do you, what's new in your neck of the woods?
I guess I'll go first. So I have some bad news. I went back to the doctor after having my hernia surgery because something didn't feel quite right. So I went back to the surgeon and they discovered a second hernia.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. So, and the surgeon, because this is actually a different surgeon than I had originally, because my original surgeon was on vacation. But I think I took her back, you know, because she said, you know, do you want to wait for him to get back to have your surgery, or would you want me to do it? And, you know, I basically flat out said, like, I either want this done as soon as possible or I'm not getting it done for months because I'm a hunter and hunting season's coming up and I need to be back to normal.
Right.
You know, and I think I kind of shocked her because I was like, I'll deal with it, you know, for a couple of months or, you know,
yeah.
But she was like, you know, when do you want to be back to normal, or basically when are you looking to start hunting? And she's like, yeah, I think, you know, we can manage that, you know, don't go too crazy, but I think you know, being up and active and, you know, that kind of stuff by deer season shouldn't be a problem.
But, well, that's good.
Yeah. I'd have told her I wanted to be back to normal after the first surgery.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a different story.
So they got you scheduled and you're all set on that?
Yep, I'm scheduled. I got my pre-surgery COVID test today.
Take two?
Yeah, try two. Well, that was actually another good story because, you know, it's a drive-through. You know, you drive, pull into a parking spot, and the nurse comes out and says, you know, have you had a COVID test before? And I told her, I said, yeah, I know exactly what you're about to do to me. There's no element of surprise. Like, you know, I know exactly what's about to happen.
Did you tell her that I brought my own tissues since you don't provide them?
Well, this time, this is a funny story. This time they did provide me a tissue, but it was like a piece of tissue paper, like the cheapest, like garbage tissue you could ever imagine. She hands me that and a paper, you know, basically telling me like the if I test positive, like what I'm supposed to do.
Okay.
But yeah, she hands me just this tiny, like the most garbage tissue I've ever seen. And it's like, yeah, this isn't nothing. I had a roll of paper towels in the passenger seat next to me. So, you know, she did it. And I took her tissue and immediately, like, you know, plugged my nose and grabbed a paper towel and put it on there. But, yeah, this time wasn't as bad as the first time. They had
that's good.
They had me open my mouth. She said, open your mouth all the way and exhale. And that, like, prevented my nose from clinching like as much, like the sneeze or the gag reflex of my nose.
Okay.
Like with my mouth open all the way, like that I don't think those muscles could clinch as much. So it wasn't as terrible this time.
That's good. They're getting it figured out.
Yeah.
Good. Well, not good, but
right.
Glad it was better than last time.
Yeah, so I'll be gimping around for early, you know, dove season and probably early deer season. I'll be pretty weak because I'm not supposed to lift anything over 20 pounds for 6 weeks after the surgery.
So what you're telling us is we're going to have to drag your deer for you?
Yeah, well, and I'm going to have to hunt from, like, the ground because I can't carry a bow and a stand, you know.
Oh, right.
That's way more than 20 pounds.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she said, you know, because they're, you know, my original hernia was on my left side. This one's on the right. So basically, she said, you know, your whole lower abdomen, you know, will now be weakened. So it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
So pretty unfortunate. I mean, I guess it's better than in the middle of season, but pretty unfortunate timing.
Yeah.
Had they found it, you know, found the both hernias at the same time, I would be all healed up by now, but I gotta have them back to back. So
yeah, double header. All right.
At least you get that buy one get one free discount.
Right. I gotta buy one get one free.
A little BOGO.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing now is, you know, they're asking me, like, you know, if I order this test, will you get it? And it's like, Sure, I will. What do I care? You know, like if I order blood work, are you going to get it? And it's like, yeah, sure. I don't care. So.
Don't get me started on our healthcare and insurance billing and cash.
Yeah. I can't imagine not having insurance. You know?
That's got to be one of the most bass-ackwards broken systems in this country. Mm-hmm. It's one of the only things that you buy and don't know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're the type that goes to a fancy restaurant with no prices on the menu. But I can't think of anything else that you buy. You're like, yeah, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm going to have this test done. And then they just send you a bill. And it's like, well, figure it out. I know you didn't know that was going to be a $1,000 test, but sorry.
Yeah.
Well, and to complicate things even more, it really isn't a $1,000 test. They just have to bill it that way in order to get reimbursed some fraction of that, which makes it even more broken.
Yeah.
Because not only do you not know how much things cost, but not everybody pays the same price for the same service.
Right.
And there's really no dictating who pays what. It's just, it's really screwed up.
You just get my blood pressure up.
So, anyhow. Yeah.
Yes, I digress. So, no real update. Well, a little update. I've checked my camera, my trail camera in the backyard. That's the only camera I have. It's been up soaking for a month. And it's not, I'm not putting any feed or anything, and it's not like it's a well-worn trail, but, you know, I see some tracks back there from time to time, and nothing, you know, exciting. I got a, what looks to be like a, you know, maybe a 4-point in velvet, and then I had a doe and fawn that have been hanging out back there for a while. My wife and daughter actually saw the fawn one day. Come, you know, it was out back and then come running up through the yard past the house. And but that was cool. I mean, cool to see. Cool. But I think what I'm going to try this year, there's I think I've talked about it last year and I just didn't do it. But I've seen people cut a piece of vine, you know, the vine that grows in the woods or whatever, and hang it from a tree as like a licking branch for a mock scrape. And I've got a little sort of secluded area of my backyard that I'm going to try. It's where I've got this camera. I'm going to try and set something like that up. It's we'll see if it works, because it's not like on a field edge or something. It would be just off the field edge. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. I don't know, but it'll be a fun experiment. Yeah. Why not? Right.
Yeah, my plan is to try and do the same thing. I mean, not just necessarily with the vine, but because I'm not getting any bucks, or very few bucks, and the ones I do get are not ones that I want to harvest off my property, I'm going to try and open up some scrapes and see if that does anything. Because rumor has it that there's people around have seen big deer. I've yet to see pictures of them, but I've heard a couple different people tell me that they saw big deer. So definitely within distance of my property. So they're there. They're around, I guess. So I just got to try to figure out how to get them on my property.
Yeah, that's good news.
And if it doesn't work before the rut, I've got plenty of attractant to bring them in during the rut, because I'm loaded with does. So.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, that's kind of my only update. Nothing to write home about, I guess, other than I got the does coming in. I get a few bucks here and there, but they're, like I said, nothing that's going to be on my target list this year, at least for my own property. The one, if I came across it you know, later season on public land, I'd probably shoot it. But not something I'm going to shoot at on my property, just because there's not a ton of hunting pressure. You know, I mean, at least from what I'm told, that there's not a ton of people that hunt. So as long as they sit tight on or around my property, they don't have a ton of pressure. So
sure,
we'll see.
Okay.
But yeah,
it's about question all I for get. You, Jake. Has your neighbor's chicken started laying eggs yet? Do you know?
Last I heard, no. But I don't think they had tried putting any fake eggs or golf balls or anything in yet. But last I talked to them, they had not started laying eggs.
I think mine are defective.
You think?
I don't know. I keep threatening to, if these things don't start laying eggs soon, they're going in the pot. But I found out, did I tell you guys this, that the type of chickens we got are, I found this out after the fact, are typically tend to start laying eggs later than, I don't know, other breeds, maybe? Have I told you guys this yet?
No.
No.
So we got Easter egger chickens, which are supposed to lay like
Easter
colored,
eggs?
You know, sort of. Like the shells are like a bluish green, can be a bluish or greenish color. Well, we thought, oh, that'll be fun. That'll be cool. They're, you know, they're supposed to be good layers. The woman that lets me hunt on our property here locally, she recommended, oh yeah, Easter eggers are good. They're friendly. They're good, you know, good laying chickens. Well, you know, if you Google when do chickens start laying eggs, you know, you'll find like 16 weeks. When they're 16 weeks old, you know, you can start looking for eggs. So 16 weeks come and go. And I'm like, what in the world, man? No eggs, no eggs. 17 weeks, no eggs, no eggs. So I Google, when do Easter eggers start laying eggs? Well, because Easter eggers are a cross between, you know, like an Americana chicken and something else. Well, because of that, you know, I was reading like they start laying at 20 weeks, or it takes up to 6 months for them to start laying. So as of today, August 10th, they are 21 weeks old and still no eggs. So I'm frustrated with my chickens, but, I'm sure in due time it'll happen. But yeah, that's all I have for updates. You guys got anything else?
No.
I don't think so. Just counting the days down, getting closer.
Yep. All right. So. Well, let's get into our topic for this week then. Welcome to the Ohio Huntsman Podcast, where three brothers, Jason, Jacob, and Jeff, discuss all things hunting in Ohio. Our goal is to be your source for accurate and reliable hunting news and conservation issues in the great state of Ohio, as well as some fun and interesting conversations along the way. This is the Ohio Huntsman Podcast.
Are you listening?
All right, so today we've got Jacob, Jeff, and myself, and as we're getting closer and closer to fall hunting season, we thought it would be a fun or interesting conversation to talk about opening day success. And we're not just going to talk about whitetails. We, you know, we ourselves pursue things other than whitetails in the fall, and we know a lot of you do also. And so we're going to cover a variety of things here. So what are you guys like? I know I'm starting to get, even though the leaves aren't starting to change, it's still hot. You know, it's, what is this, late July we're recording, but I'm starting to get the itch. I'm starting to get the bug, right? Where you're really starting to think about fall hunting season. I put my first trail camera up. I guess it's been a couple weeks ago now, I'm trying just out in the back, and I'm trying to be very diligent about not going back there and checking it, because when it's right in your backyard, it's easy to just like, yeah, I'm gonna go check the camera. You know, Dad checks his religiously, yeah. Man.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah. And wonders why his bucks are nocturnal.
Yeah, he gets a picture of a buck in the daylight. He's like, oh, I hope he sticks around for deer season. It's like, well, no, dude. You're back there every day.
Well, and also he, you know, will put corn out and wonder, oh, you know, the birds just eat it all up, you know, and it's like, yeah, because you're putting literally a cup out every day for them.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like there's nothing left for the deer after you put your one cup out.
Yep. Takes a jar full back there or something.
Yeah, he's funny because I'll pick up corn for him, and you know he's like, oh yeah, that one bag, that 50-pound bag, that'll last me 6 months. Like that'll last me a day, 2 days. Yeah. He's like, oh, you got a lot of deer. I'm like, I don't know. I do have a lot of deer, but I think he's a little stingy with his corn, though.
He's good for a laugh. But in all seriousness, right? So I put my first camera up, and I don't know. I did, you know, if you guys listen back during turkey season, I did sort of start a relationship with the farmer that owns the property behind my house. But, you know, he made it very clear that he's got a group of guys that deer hunt back there. And, you know, so I don't like my chances for getting deer hunting permission. I'm pretty confident that, you know, if I were to shoot a deer on my property and it ran onto his property, which is probably what would happen, he would be fine with me going to get it. But I don't know that I, being totally honest, I most likely won't hunt back there, but it's just cool to, get the camera out, I guess, and see what kind of pictures I can get. So I guess to continue on that line of thinking, what are you guys doing to get ready for fall hunting season, right? The cameras obviously are a whitetail, typically a whitetail targeted thing. Although Jeff, you'd be the type of guy that would put cameras out for squirrels, I think. Have you done that?
I've done it to, I mean, no, not specifically for squirrels.
Okay.
But I've definitely used camera, you know, trail cameras to identify that, like, you know, because I'm after a black squirrel, and I've definitely used trail cameras and like, oh, hey, there's a black squirrel that shows up on this trail camera.
Oh, okay.
And I intend used
intel from a trail camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I intend to use a trail camera for waterfowl hunting. I'm going to set it up, you know, like on the water, you know, the water's edge, to basically, so then I know when they're coming and if any waterfowl are coming to that spot.
So at your house, or where are you? Do you care to disclose where you're going to do this?
I mean, I'm going to do it at, I don't know yet, but I would do it at my house and out at our grandparents' farm.
Okay. You know,
the private property that I have access to.
Sure.
I mean, I think the public stuff's a little, you know, I hate putting trail cameras out on public to begin with because of the risk of getting them stolen.
Yeah.
And also just, I don't think it's as good of a strategy on public because, you know, on public land, a lot of times you're hunting the other hunters.
Right.
So.
Makes sense. And you could also, go ahead, Jake.
Jeff, when you get this, we'll circle back to the black squirrel. Are you mounting that baby, or what's going on with that? What are you going to do?
I'm planning to get it mounted, but I don't know. We'll see. Because that's getting a squirrel mount is one of those things where the prices vary drastically, you know, from not very much, you know, like $150 to up to the price of almost a deer mount.
Oh, wow. And,
you know, so if I could find someone who does good work at an affordable price, I'll get it mounted. But I gotta find someone to do it, and I gotta shoot one first.
So you have intel on one?
Yes, this year I will shoot a black squirrel.
So if you better have a taxidermist lined up then, right? Or I guess you could skin it and put it in your freezer or something.
Well, I'm not even going to skin it. I'm going to maybe gut it and put it in the freezer so I don't damage it.
Okay. So if anybody knows a taxidermist that does squirrels for a reasonable price, you know, hit us up. Yeah. Let Jeff know. Yeah.
Hit us up.
So, and then the other thing, Jeff, you were working on was you were trying to get a little sunflower plot for doves, right? And that kind of went bust.
Yeah, completely went bust. I have one black oil sunflower that actually has started the bloom. One made it to maturity.
One.
So that's basically a complete bust. I mean, yeah. there's some others that still might come to bloom, some other sunflowers, but they're, because some of the ones that survived, you know, like some of them had the top nipped off of them, but they're still living, so they might still eventually bloom, but it didn't turn out well.
Yeah. Even at that, it's not like you got a whole field of
right
sunflowers.
Right. Or even a patch of sunflowers. I have sporadic, like one here, one there.
Right.
It's, yeah, a disaster. Did not turn out. Complete and total bust.
Yeah. So those are a few things that we've got. Or I don't even want to say in the works, but just like some early season getting ready for fall hunting season to open up.
Yeah, I went down and mowed by my pond, you know, mowed the whole bank. So yeah, okay. There's, you know, when the geese do start flying again, they'll be fresh, you know, fresh growth, young, tender grass growth. So we'll see how that works.
Okay.
Most people try to keep the geese away from their pond. I'm trying to attract them. So.
What's your, cause you don't have a retrieving dog. What's your plan if you shoot one and it falls in the middle of your pond?
Kayak.
Oh, I forgot you had the kayaks. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just kayak out and get it.
Okay.
Right. Swim. I'm just going to strip butt naked and swim out there. I mean, I have thought about this, like, in earlier season, you know, because there's a couple places I might go hunt that are, you know, for early goose that I'm not going to take the kayak with me. And it's like, well, if one actually falls, like, in the middle of the water, I'm just going to have to swim out there and get it. Like, I don't have any other way of getting to it.
Yeah. You have to
so
get good with your lasso.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your lifeguarding skills. Throw that lifesaver ring thing out there.
Yeah.
That donut float. See if you could snag it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess, do you guys... Where do we want to start? Do we want to talk whitetails and then go into the other species, or where do we want? What do you guys think?
Let's leave whitetails till the end.
Whitetails to the end. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean that's most likely going to be the climax of our conversation.
Okay.
So.
All right. So we touched on doves a little bit. Do you want to start with doves?
Sure.
All right. So, you know, I guess the, you know, full disclosure here, Jeff may have done a little bit more in the way of dove hunting, but last season was our first sort of official dove hunt.
And organized dove hunt, yeah.
Yeah, organized dove hunt. Group of guys together and gals. Your wife joined us.
Yeah.
And so this season coming up, like I said, Jeff, you tried to plant a little dove plot, sunflower plot. That was sort of a bust. But looking forward to dove season, I guess my plan is, you know, sort of more of the same of last year, right? We found they had corn in the field, and that might be a little different this year. Is like, I haven't been out. I don't know, Jake, if you've been out there to sort of survey what crops they've got and what fields out there. But last year it was corn, and there was that a couple of the that area with a couple of those dead trees where the, you know, they were kind of like roosting trees or doves that were coming through the area were wanting to stop off at that tree, it seemed like, for, you know, for a while. And that was kind of a good place to camp out. You know, we could kind of get into doves coming and going from that area.
Right.
So, you know, my plan at least is to sort of look for similar scenarios to that. Do you guys have any other thoughts or any other game plans for sort of opening day success on doves?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was my plan, was to hit those same dead trees and hope that lightning strikes twice. I mean, they certainly flock to those trees. I mean, outside of that, we didn't have any luck, I don't think. Did we? Did we shoot any doves that weren't coming or going from those trees?
We flushed a few out of the rows. Yeah. We were walking one of the fields. But
I don't think anyone got a shot at any of those.
Yeah. Well, we shot at them. We just didn't kill them. Yeah. We just didn't. Because I flushed one out of the corn, and I still am not sure. I mean, other than just it was a poor shot angle, if you will. You know, I flushed it out, and it was flying away from me. Because Dad flushed it out, and he didn't have a shell in his gun. So he clicked at it, and then I shot. So it was a little further away, but I hit it and dusted feathers off of it. And we sat there and watched it because we were trying to see where it fell, you know, because it's like that thing's hit bad. I mean, it had feathers and it just flew, you know, we watched it for a mile. I mean, it just flew a mile away. You know, it just disappeared into the horizon. It's like, well, I guess I didn't hit it that well.
Well, but I guess so. Speaking of that, Jeff, and I think you maybe were going to get into this, but I know after that scenario, you really started looking at your dove ammo selection, right? Because I just went out and bought the shells that had the dove, the picture of the dove on them, right? That was the extent of my ammo research. But after last season, you did some homework on dove ammo, right?
Yeah. I have intentions. I'm probably going to use Federal Hi-Bird. I mean, it's kind of expensive, so if you're really getting into the doves, that's an expensive dove hunt. But if we get into those same sort of shots where it's further shots, you know, because the majority of our shots we had last year were these doves trying to fly into the very top branches of this dead tree to roost.
Right.
And so they were long shots. And we did a lot of dusting the feathers off birds, or we'd hit them and they'd be hit. They'd fly down, but they're still alive. And, you know, now they're in brush and we got to find a follow up shot.
Yeah, because of course they or they just crawl up under the thickest, nastiest briar patch they can get under, you know, and it's like,
right,
yeah,
right. So I'm And I'm going to be using, if we get into that same scenario, a much tighter choke. You know, I'm going to bring some different chokes to switch out from. So if we get into that scenario, I'm going to be much better prepared.
That's a good idea. I should look into that. Because yeah. I don't, for my 20 gauge, I don't know that I have a selection of chokes. I shot a 20 gauge last year, and I've got a better 20 gauge. I've got a, because I was actually shooting a youth 20 gauge. It was a 20 gauge that I started deer hunting with. And it, you know, it just, you know, now that I'm a full grown small adult, it doesn't fit me very well. But yeah, just like I found myself when I would shoulder that shotgun, I wasn't looking down the rib. You know, I had to like adjust it and find, you know, because I think I told you guys this. I don't know that I talked about this on the podcast, but I went to a team building event with work back when you used to do that kind of thing, be around other people. And we went and actually shot, I guess it was, and I don't know, shot trap, I guess. I don't know the difference. I don't, trap, skeet, whatever. I think it was trap. Do you guys know the difference?
No, not okay. Exactly.
Well, anyhow,
they were
throwing clays from a central house, shooting house, and we were, you know, you line up on a line. It's like what they have the high school competitive shooting things you see, right? You line up on a line, right? It wasn't like going from station to station. Everybody shot from the same place, and the thrower threw them out at a random, you know, angle, distance, whatever.
Anyway. There was like a half moon cement area. Is that what there was?
Yeah, it was like a cement bunker.
Right, but you probably were only shooting straight from behind, but there was like stations that you could go and angle out around that center bunker.
Oh, yeah. Because it was a team building event. Yeah, because it was a team building event, they had guys lined up at each of the stations, and then we just took turns. You know, okay, it's your turn. When it throws, it's your turn to shoot. Uh-huh. You know,
okay.
You know, now it's your turn. You say pull, and it'll throw one. Yeah. That's what we did. Whatever that's called, that's what we did.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Yeah. That's either skeet or trap. That's not sporting clays. I know that.
Okay. So they provided, you had to buy the shells at cost, whatever, from the club that we went to. But the members of the club provided a variety of shotguns, over-unders, semi, they had a variety of stuff. And I shot an over-under. I had never shot an over-under. And that gun just fit me. Like, I shouldered that gun, and I was looking right down the rib. You know, and I was breaking clays like a machine, man. I was feeling good about myself. So that, you know, I had done that. Then we did this dove hunt, and I'm throwing up this youth 870, and it's like, man, this is not working. So anywho, I have a full grown 870 this year. I mean, I've got other 12 gauges. I could shoot a 12 gauge, you know, but I have a full size 870 now. So
still 20 gauge or 12 gauge?
Still 20 gauge. I have a 20 gauge 870 now from Grandpa.
Gotcha. That's cool.
So that's a long story to say I might look at getting some other chokes for that, because I like Jeff's idea of being able to swap chokes out on the fly depending on what kind of shots you're getting into.
Yeah, because I mean, last year we needed distance, you know, I mean, they weren't, you didn't need your pattern opened up very much at all, because they were basically stationary landing on a branch, but they were a distance. So
yeah,
last year we needed our patterns as tight as possible, and I'm sure this year we'll probably have birds flying low everywhere, you know, coming, you know, like 15 feet away from us, and we'll need right. our patterns as open as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, other ideas, you know, if you can't hunt a food source for doves early season, basically if you don't have a dove field or a cut wheat field, good places to look are trees where the doves are going to want to roost, and then water. You know, they like to hang out by water, especially if there's gravel, you know, like ponds that have a gravelly edge, or if there's a creek next to the field, you know, they like to go into those places to drink and then get grit to digest their food with.
Well, that's a good, I mean, now that you say that, that's a good, you know, if you have property that has like a gravel or dirt road that runs through it, right? That, you know,
right.
in the morning times, you know, you'll just see them on the side of a asphalt road, right? But you get that kind of gravelly shoulder and you'll see doves, you know, flushing off the side of the road because they're there. That's what they're doing. They're getting that grit for the crop, you know?
Yeah. I was driving down a road yesterday evening, like right around dusk, and this one section of road had so many doves on the power lines that the power lines were sagging. I've never seen so many doves, you know, but yeah, I mean, and fat doves too. I mean, just real fat lunker of doves, you know, and they were just all down the power line.
Huh.
You know, in like groups of like two or three. And yeah, you know, I'm assuming that it was probably pretty fertile nesting ground and, you know, that area. And so they were just sitting there in their family groups or whatever, just all down the power lines.
Just Booner doves.
Yeah, just Booner doves.
All right, so I think that pretty much, I mean, that exhausts my knowledge or what I have to say about doves. Do you guys have anything else you want to add on doves before we move on?
No, that basically exhausts my knowledge and expertise of doves.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. You know,
whack a few pine trees if you're not finding any. They like to hang out in pine trees too, so... You know, if you're having a dry day, maybe go walk, find where there's some, you know, small pine trees, walk past those. You might flush one or two out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's talk squirrels now. First of all, Jake, do you have intentions of hunting squirrels this year?
Yes, because I got a lot of squirrels at my property. So I'm going to.
Okay.
Have a good old time out there shooting them.
Okay.
Yeah, I plan on it. I don't want to say that it's overrun with squirrels, but there's definitely... Squirrels are not hard to find when you're out walking around. You yeah. hear them run, you know, running through the trees. And so I think it'll be a pretty... I don't want to say easy, but easy place to at least shoot a couple. I don't think they've ever been... hunted, so once I start shooting at them, they might make themselves scarce, but for now, I mean there's some you can walk up, I don't want to say close enough to throw a rock at, but pretty close to them and they don't scurry off. So
you gonna take the neighbor's boys with you?
I thought about it, but I don't know because the older boy, he would be fine, he'd be good at it. I might take him. But the younger boy, he's 5 and I think he wants to shoot, but I don't think his dad's introduced him yet, and I don't want to be the guy to, you know, because his dad hunts. I don't think he wants me to introduce him, But it's kind of like, for me, it's like, what are you waiting on, dude?
Okay, I gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like, he...
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
He wants to... Like, I was out... I got a pellet gun or whatever, and I was out shooting it the other day, and he came up and was like, let me try. And I'm like, I don't really know. It's like, do you know how? Have you ever looked through a scope? Do you know how to work this? Do you know how to hold it? No. And I was like, maybe we should talk to your dad first.
Yeah.
So, but the older one would be, he'd be fine. I just don't know. They're both busy with sports. I don't know. If there's sports, who knows? You know, if there's going to be football or whatever for the kids.
Right. Right, yeah.
Be more finding time, but we'll see.
Well, you know, if you need help cracking a few squirrels, you know, give me a call.
I'll call you. I'll call you. I'm going to need some help cracking a few deer, so I'm going to need your help there, too.
Yeah. All right. I want to pause here briefly to talk about our sponsor, Mastin's Deer Scents. Mastin's is a deer scent company, and it's not just liquid scent. So they've got lots of different options. They've got scented gel crystals, which you can refresh with liquid scent. They obviously have your liquid scents. They also have deer scented candles. So doe and estrus candles, and those can be used with their double scent stacker, which is basically an aluminum tube with some vents cut in it that you can put the candle down in so it doesn't blow out. Then it's got a tray on top. You can add liquid scent that the candle then heats the scent, and so it allows you, as the name implies, to stack scents or layer scents, if you will, and the scents are heated to make them more realistic. So lots of different options, lots of great prices. So check them out. Go to mastinsdeerscents.com, or you can go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors and find all of our sponsor information there. And now let's get back into the conversation. So my strategy for squirrels is just go where I plan to deer hunt, because they're always it's a little, you know, that's a joke, but that's, you know, it always seems to be the thing. You know, you go squirrel hunting, can't find a squirrel. You go deer hunting, and all you find is squirrels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope to, Ella's, you know, she talks about going deer hunting, and, you know, I took her last year and we sat in that blind, you know, and we just kind of hung out and chatted, but, I think we could actually have a chance at a squirrel, but she, you know, if I can get her interested, I'd like to take her squirrel hunting again and hopefully get a squirrel this time, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Early season squirrel hunting is very tough. You know, if I didn't have so much, I don't know, pent up, like, need to hunt, but hunting addiction, I would not participate very often in early season squirrel hunting.
It's a bit of a different game.
It's a totally different game, in my opinion. I mean, because most of the time you can't see very far in the woods. It's very hard to see up in the trees, you know, because they're all leaved out. And yep. Most of the time, the squirrels don't really come to the ground at all. You know, it's the best strategy is you listen for the rain, if you will, the rain of nuts falling out of trees, and go to, you know, find that tree, basically, and you sit there underneath of it until you can spot the squirrel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And drop them out.
You typically use a shotgun or a 22 for early season?
Typically a 22. Just because most of the shots are really far. You know, okay. You're sitting there trying to poke them out of the top of trees.
See, I was thinking about trying a shotgun this year because of the leaf cover. Right. I don't have to have that perfect window. I can just I know there's one, you know, like right there. But I just saw him go behind that cluster of leaves, sort of thing.
Yeah, and I mean that's a valid strategy as well. You know, it's kind of just shoot, you know.
Or like I can see his tail, but I can't see his head, or you know, like.
Right, right. Just kind of shoot into the ball of leaves it's in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a valid strategy. I've not had a ton of luck doing that. Most of the time when I squirrel hunt with a shotgun, I use a shotgun to squirrel hunt less and less nowadays. I just seem to have better luck. I seem to see more squirrels when I'm using the 22, and I don't know if that's just because it's, you know, quieter shooting, so it doesn't spook them as much, or just luck, or what, but...
That could be. I mean, there could be something to that. You know, you don't have the big boom of a shotgun, and, you know, it's just the crack of a 22, and the squirrels are kind of like, no, what was that? And then they kind of go about their business versus, you know, the big bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's sort of... I mean, obviously, there's the, as far as like finding squirrels, right? Nut trees, mass producing trees, right? That's, I mean, you can do some scouting now before season opens and find, you know, because we all know oak trees don't, I mean, they might make some acorns every year, but they've got, you know, years where like this tree or this group of trees is really got a lot of acorns, or, you know, this block of woods or this corner of the woods or whatever, you know, it's like, man, these trees are just loaded. Just find mass producing trees. And like Jeff said, you know, it's hard to spot them from far away, but you know, you're kind of a lot of times using your ears more to sort of track down that one tree that they're in.
Yeah. And those first couple of weeks, first 2 weeks, you know, usually hickory trees are the ones you want to get to, just because their nuts get ripe, if you will, a little sooner a lot of times than other mass producing trees. So I have best luck with hickory trees. Find a, you know, batch of hickory trees, you know, even if you're having a slow day, just find some hickory trees and sit up in them, and you know, if nuts start falling down, find the squirrel, right, or the bird. Sometimes it's a bird, but something's up there if the nuts start falling down.
Do you use binoculars? Do either of you use binoculars for squirrel hunting?
Squirrel hunting?
I've never used binoculars. No.
Okay.
I can't say that I've squirrel hunted enough to answer that question honestly.
To have a preference one way or another.
Yeah, to have a preference, right. I wouldn't be opposed to doing it, I guess. I think it could be, especially in early season, where they're hard to kind of pick out.
Right.
But I could count the number of times I've squirrel hunted probably on one hand, if not definitely on two. So I plan to hunt squirrel more, but I just haven't in the past.
Yeah. Okay. So... do we get into deer now?
Yeah, I mean, because under the other early hunting season would be goose and teal, and I don't have any advice there, really.
Your strategy is to try.
Yeah, my strategy is to try, yeah. Yep, get out there. I mean, obviously, I'm going to scout. I mean, I think that's... the kind of the strategy there is, at least my strategy so far, is to find where some's at and go there early season and try to shoot one.
Give it the old college try.
Yeah.
Okay. So early season deer strategy, and this is going to you know, maybe be a little specific to us, because we did get drawn for a Parks lottery hunt this year, which we're in the first block of time that you're allowed in there. So we are sort of, again, you know, if you listen last season, we're sort of again in a scenario where we're going to be hunting a block of ground that we're not allowed to go in and do boots on the ground scouting. So we're doing digital scouting, and, you know, day one, go in there and try to scout and hunt, basically. And but I guess overall, what, you know, whether you're in a parks hunt or you're hunting private or you're hunting public, what, because obviously, right, your strategy changes throughout the season. So what do you guys kind of key in on early season when, you know, for deer hunting, I guess?
Well, for me, it's, I mean, it's kind of a, not that I want the deer season time to change, but it's kind of a really sort of an unfortunate time that our deer season kicks off, because all summer deer are on a feeding pattern. A lot of times they're on the soybeans, hitting the soybeans hard, hard, hard. And then typically the soybeans turn like a week before deer season opens.
Yeah.
So that changes everything if you're hunting farmland, you know, I mean, because
which a lot of the state is.
Right. If you're, you know, dried out brown soybeans are not as favorable or palatable as the green, you know, they much prefer the green beans. So they turn to their yellow brown stage. It's like usually like a week before, which moves everything. So
right, I guess that shift.
Right. So I would, I guess if you've never followed that or tracked that, don't get your hopes up too high on, not saying it will happen, but big deer coming into the bean fields at night, because that could easily not, that could change.
Right. Your dad checking your camera every day, and you consistently, right? Right? It's like, they're right here, they're here, they're here. And then, like you said, it seems like a week or so before season, you know, that this shift happens.
Right. So from, that's kind of the one thing I've noticed, or from experience, you know, like out at Grandpa's farm, it's like, man, there's these really nice deer, big deer, big deer, big deer. And then they disappear. Where do they go? It's like ghost town.
Yeah.
And part of that is, you know, once opening day comes around, everybody's in the woods.
Well, and even before opening day, right? There's right. like this influx, like, oh, everybody's like, oh, geez, right. season opens next week. I better go hang a bunch of stands, you know?
And right, right.
Like we've talked in the past, there's a lot of people that have access to those woods, and all of a sudden there's a lot of human activity out there.
Right, right. So that's kind of been my experience, not really a strategy, more or less, other than don't put all your eggs in one basket based on evidence that may not be accurate.
Right.
You know, if you have, I mean, you have to try and hunt what you, you know, using your trail cameras. I mean, I'm not saying ignore all of it. That deer still lives somewhere in the neighborhood, but don't necessarily lock yourself in. Like, I'm going to hunt, this camera has gotten, you know, this monster buck in this bean field, whatever, 5 days a week, five nights a week for the last month. That doesn't mean he's going to be there opening day. Because one, there's more pressure, to the beans turn, you know? So you just have to, I guess, use your woodsmanship a little bit and maybe try to find an access route, or maybe track back where he might be coming from to the beans instead of just sitting over.
Well, and
I've
I think
any lonely sits over a bean field.
Yeah.
Opening day.
Well, and I think it's a good opportunity to use like historical data, You know, if you have historical trail camera knowledge that, yep, every year, you know, I've got pictures, and then a couple days before season or a week before season, week and a half, whatever, things shift, right? And I stop getting pictures on this camera, but I start getting more pictures on, you know, this other camera back over here in the woods in some thicker cover, or, you know. But if you can sort of learn that historical shift, that historical pattern, then instead of, you know, because it feels like it's the most, you know, you hear people talk about MRI, most recent information, right? You got to hunt the most recent information. And so it feels like you're hunting the most recent information. I got pictures of deer here last week, you know, but, you know, there's a, like we just said, there's a lot going on, right? The crops are hardening off, browning up. They're not a desirable food source or near as a desirable food source. There's all of a sudden a lot more human activity, you know, walking field edges, looking for deer sign, people sort of scouting, last minute scouting, people get antsy, right? And deer react to both of those things.
Right. And the weather doesn't typically cooperate because it's usually warm and the deer have started to put on their winter coat, so they're not real fond of cruising around either. Yep. At times. So
yep.
And another if you listen to a previous episode, I talked about another strategy is I will never hunt over near water or standing water specifically.
Yeah,
on open
still
day.
Slow moving. Yeah,
yeah, the mosquitoes, oh my gosh, the mosquitoes, that's not happening again. That's a way to ruin opening day.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a suffer fest.
Yes, mosquitoes were terrible.
Yeah. So, but how about you, Jeff?
So I got a couple of really good opening day tips, I think. One really good idea for opening day hunts is hunt apples. If you can find apples, hunt apples, because you don't need to worry about, you know, the so much, even like the weather, you know, because like the weather can affect a lot of hunting fields, you know, because if it's really hot, you know, the deer don't want to come out until later. So I really recommend hunting apples. Even if you have like a deer feeder, you know, spilling out corn, a lot of times apples are a better strategy to go with. You know, the deer really want to eat the apples that time of year. You know, the starchiness of the corn when it being hot, you know, it's too high energy of a food source, really. And another good strategy I have is don't hunt the morning of opening day. And this is a do as I say, not as I do thing. But it's really not a good idea to hunt the morning of opening day, because all you're really doing is educating deer. You know, if you go and hunt the evening of opening day, that's when the deer are typically more active, you know, and you're going to have better luck. If you go and hunt the morning of opening day, all you're doing is putting your human scent like in that area, and the deer might walk by midday, you know, because they get up midday to eat a little bit. And then if you go in the evening, well, they now know like, oh, hey, there was a human here, you know, sometime today, and I'm not going to come by this evening.
Right.
So
is there ever a scenario where you would hunt opening the morning of opening day?
I mean, I, you know, I do it a lot because I can't keep myself out of the woods or, you know, out of the stand.
right.
But if obviously if I had you know, recent scouting information that, oh, hey, deer are coming through here in the morning. They're feeding in this field in the morning. They're, you know, using this trail or whatever. Or like, you know, deer are feeding in that field in the morning. And the only way out of there is to come back through this trail. You know, I would hunt and I would advise you to hunt. Like I would say that's a good idea to hunt.
That's kind of the scenario I was thinking, right? I wouldn't rely on trail camera because you have to go in there and put scent in to check the camera. But if you've got visual, like, you know, you can observe from some distance away and, you know, every morning after daylight, you got deer in an area that, you know, you can kind of slip in the back way and catch them coming out of that field. That would be the time or the scenario that I could think of that I would consider hunting the morning of opening day.
Yeah.
You know, with fairly high confidence of success.
Yeah. And morning hunting and like day hunting can be very successful if you're one of those people who has like closed canopy woods to hunt in early season, because it's hot, the deer like to be in that closed canopy. It's cooler in there. So
right. If
you know of a good deer trail or a good pinch point in closed canopy forest that you can sneak into, you know, that may be a good place to hunt, you know, around the 10 o'clock time, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. The deer might be up and moving and you definitely can catch them, but you're going to be hot and you're really going to have to worry about your scent because you're probably going to be sweating like crazy.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'll caveat that with, if you just need some scent therapy, you know, just, maybe don't go hunt your best spot if you're just looking for some stand therapy, you know. I just got to get out in the woods, you know. But by all means, we'll be the last people to tell people to stay out of the woods.
Go hunt your buddy's spot.
go
hunt his spot. Opening day, go hunt there.
Or hunt the line between you and the neighbor.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think I might do that this year, is like just go hunt like just basically like the very edge.
You know,
like don't even set foot in the woods, just like hunt the edge. You know, like maybe I'll go, you know, in my backyard or dad won't be out opening day.
Yeah.
And you know, just the very edge and just to say I was out there.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, it's going to be on.
Yeah. Okay. So Jeff, we talked about not hunting opening day. Did you cover sort of your plans for opening day or your opening day strategy?
I mean, apples. I mean, that's what I'm going to be looking for.
Okay.
Apples and edge. I mean, I'm hunting the afternoon is, you know, hunting field edges in the afternoon and hunting apples. You know, those are going to be my early season tactics. I'm going to leave the deep woods for later in the year.
So I guess another thing that I'll add, and we've kind of touched around it, is another strategy, and it's not only an opening day strategy, but any of these like high hunter participation days, is hunt the other hunters, right? If you know your neighbors or, you know, you've got a piece of prop, it's public ground, you know, and people typically hunt such and such area, and just think about where it's going to push the deer, right? And if you can set up in a way that you're going to catch the deer as they're being pushed out of their normal areas, that can be a really good strategy. I mean, we did that parks cleanup, and the guy from the parks talked about opening day of pheasant season. Like, there's guys in there and they all start at the parking lot and spread out basically. And so if you can get yourself in the back corner, set up in the back corner of this property, now it's a little dicey, right? Because you're deer hunting while they're out there, you know, with a bow, while they're out there with shotguns. But, you know, wear your orange and make sure you're seen as, you know, people start to filter by you. But
you're out there up in a tree while people are shooting at birds that fly in the air.
Yeah. I would probably stay on the ground.
See, I think I would just be like the fool, head to toe, not wear anything but blaze orange.
But still get up in a tree?
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, I don't know.
You definitely have better odds, right? Like, they're, especially in that scenario, because they've been bumped by people and dogs on the ground, right? They're going to be looking back. They, you know, they'd be a little flustered.
Yeah.
Being in a tree, I think you would definitely have better odds. It would just be a matter of, like, if there was some way where you could, like, communicate with the pheasant hunters, be like, hey guys, I'm gonna be in a tree back in this corner, just, you know, I'm gonna have lots of orange on, I'm gonna wrap the tree in orange, there's gonna be lots of orange.
Put a big sign on your car, you know, because you'll be there before everybody else. Big poster board on the back, like, I'm gonna be right here deer hunting.
There you go.
Don't shoot me.
right. Yeah. Could be a good strategy, but just, I guess, to get back to my original point, any of these high participation days, right, opening day, like Jeff said, you know, do as I say, not as I do, right? Guys just want to be in the woods, right? And so you can use that as a strategy of, okay, I know your average guy is going to come into this spot and sit down or whatever. So if I can be, you know, whatever, 100 yards farther in, then you might. And obviously that's an access thing and getting there early and all of that. There's a lot of strategy that goes into that, but it can be a successful tactic. I don't know what my specific plans are for opening day. I guess we'll probably be at the parks, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably be there. And with you saying hunt the other hunters, there's a gas line that runs through our hunting area that, you know, is typically mowed down pretty well. So probably make a pretty good deer escape route.
And there's another zone to the south of us, right?
Right. So there's two zones, you know, like it's two squares, you know, there's another zone to the south of us, and then there's another zone to the south of that one, that this gas line runs straight through the middle of both of them, in all three of them, if you will. So deer could just run straight up that gas line to get out of there, and that might be a strategy. You know, if we can't stay out of the woods, maybe go sit on that gas line and try to catch them. You know, if the other guys can't stay out of the woods either, hopefully they'll push deer up that gas line.
Yeah. So anything else you guys want to touch on? Any closing thoughts?
I have a piece of news.
So. Okay.
I ran out of venison today. Ground venison.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm all out. I have no ground venison.
What a failure. What a failure.
Yeah. I mean, I had to keep my venison stock a little low this year because we were getting a quarter of beef. So we needed freezer room for it. So And I mean, I still have ground beef, but yeah, I used up my last pack of ground venison. So,
well, and you didn't plan on COVID, and so you probably everybody's eating at home a lot more.
Right, right, that too, yeah. So yeah, I'm out. I got what is two full months basically of no ground venison, and that's if I get one, you know, opening day.
Dude, speaking of venison, I made, and we've talked about this before, this roast that comes off the front of the hind quarter. I think it's like a tip roast, or like a sirloin tip. I don't know, it's kind of that football-shaped chunk of meat. Comes off the front of the hind leg.
Mm-hmm.
I made, and we've talked about the Instant Pot in the past, how I'm not a super fan, but I used it to make venison barbacoa, Instant Pot venison barbacoa, out of that chunk of meat. And I cubed it up into big chunks, and what cubing it up allowed me to do, this was sort of a secondary benefit. The recipe said cube it up and like sear it on all sides so you get that nice brown crispy crust. But side benefit is chunking that piece of meat up. You know, it looks like a solid chunk of meat, but there's a lot of like tissue and things in there that it allows you to like clean that up and get really good looking hunks of meat. Get all that, you know, like if you ever cook that piece of meat as a roast, when it cooks down, you know, you'll see like there's kind of weird connective tissue and stuff in there. Well, cubing it up before cooking it, you get all that out of there, sear it in the, I guess it's the sear setting on the Instant Pot, sear it in there in some oil and, you know, whatever the barbacoa recipe, that the chilies and adobo sauce, you know, all that stuff. And man, did that stuff, I think I used a bigger chunk of meat than, I didn't weigh the meat. I think the recipe was like for a 3-pound chunk of meat. And, you know, that was probably more like a 5-6 pound roast or something. But so it was a little bit like, I expected the flavors to be bolder, but aside from that, like the meat turned out super tender and it wasn't tough at all. Like it was awesome. And we ate on that for a couple days, you know. I will definitely make that again, and I highly recommend it to, and I just, you know, whatever, search for a barbacoa recipe. You're basically just looking for the seasoning, but then I cooked it out of that tip roast, cubed it up, seared it in the Instant Pot. You could sear it in a cast iron skillet or whatever, you know. And then you could also do it, you know, a lot of this stuff is, it's a slow cooker recipe. You could do it in a slow cooker too. This was one instance where, you know, you can do it in like an hour versus like the slow cooker recipes are talking like 6-8 hours, you know, on low, right. Just low and slow, you know. But definitely recommend that. Venison barbacoa in the Instant Pot. So, I still have some venison. I think I haven't done the full freezer dissection, but I think I just opened my last pack of jerky from last year. So,
yeah, I've still got a little bit of everything, but I haven't. I have my stuff divided between 3 different coolers because my wife gets down there and messes up my system, but I got to go through and figure out exactly what I have so that I know, so I can make sure I have it all scheduled out to have room. And I got to get it. If there's a bunch left, I don't think there's a bunch, but if there is, I got to make sure I start going more to venison heavy recipes to get through it. But I'm pretty sure I'm on a good pace. I don't think I have a stockpile anywhere.
It's all good. I got venison tacos waiting for me upstairs, so jump off here and go get some dinner.
All right. I had venison brats for dinner before we started, so.
Nice.
I have beef for dinner because I'm out of venison.
don't sound so emotional, Jeff.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy your evening, and thank you all for listening. So that's going to do it for this week. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully you're getting excited for hunting season to open this fall. It's not far at this point, so getting gear, you know, out and tuned up, getting plans in place, figuring out some of those details so that come, you know, opening day, opening weekend, whatever it is, you're not scrambling around. So with that, as always, thank you for listening and sharing means a lot to us. That's how the podcast gets out there, right? We can post it to social, but if you guys don't share it and tell people about it, it doesn't really go anywhere. So if you enjoyed this, or if you enjoy any of our content, please share the content with your friends, your family, whoever you think might enjoy it. And if you tag us, then we know you've shared it and we can say thank you. So with that, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next week.